This is an interview for the Shoe Workers Oral History Project at Museum LA. The date is January 23rd, 2009, and I'm at the home of Ray Thibault and his wife,
Rita
in New Auburn, Maine, and this is Andrea Lumgia. Ray, could you just start by giving me your full name?
Raymond F. Thibault.
And where and when were you born?
I was born in Auburn, November 10th, 1926.
And did you grow up in Auburn?
My whole life I've lived here in Auburn.
You have.
Right.
And what were your parents' names?
My mother's name was Ida, and my father's name was Alphonse.
And were they both from Auburn, or had they come from somewhere else?
My mother was born in Lewiston, in New Canada. My father was born in Leggett, Canada. Came here at the age of 6 months.
Wow. Yeah. And so you have a strong French background.
That's true.
Yeah.
You can tell by my accent.
And what did they do for work in Auburn?
My father, when was old enough, he was a mill worker. Then he went into the shoe industry. And he also was a barber. My mother worked also in the shoe industry.
What did they do?
My mother was a fancy stitcher in the shoe industry. My father was a Goodyear stitcher and a, what's what they called? A puller.
A puller, yes.
A puller. And in the mill, he was an overseer. When Baccaram was here in New Auburn years ago, that's where he was an overseer. When that closed, that's where he went into the shoe industry.
And what companies did he work for, the shoe companies?
Main Shoe. He worked mostly for Main Shoe and Clark Shoe.
Yeah, Clark, yeah. That was, Clark fairly big amongst the shoe shops?
Yeah, Main and Clark were both big factories. And also Shapiro he worked. My mother also worked at Shapiro. And she worked at the Venus here first in Auburn, the Venus.
And what year did you say you were born?
1926. I'm 82.
So were they at the time in 1937? Were they in the shoe industry? Were they involved in the strike?
Oh yes, my dad was. I remember that. I was young, but I remember that.
Yeah,
the
you
big
remember?
Strike.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember the big strike. Yeah.
Do you remember how your parents dealt with that strike?
Well, they were out on strike. Of course, if you'd go work, you know, something would happen to your house. And they were very afraid, so they stayed home.
Yeah. But that must have been hard on them economically.
Oh, yeah. It was, but my father was a barber, too, so he did that, you know. He used to do barbering on the Friday nights and Saturday all day. And when the strike, he did barbering all week.
Yeah. And so what was it like growing up in Auburn? Was it New Auburn that you grew up in?
Well, New Auburn was called New Auburn after the Auburn Fire in 1933. It was a big fire. This place didn't burn, but everything down below all burned down. You probably never heard of that.
No.
The whole New Auburn, the Auburn down there and burned down. They were called the New Auburn. Then when they rebuilt, everything had to be rebuilt. Any apartment house, three stories or more, had to be rebuilt in brick. That's why you see now, coming in off the South Bridge here, well, the Long Bridge now, you see these brick blocks that were built after the fire. In 1936, then it had a big flood. But I grew up in Auburn, went to school here in Auburn, went to school here at St. Louis School, and then at Walton, Yale. And I didn't graduate from Yale. I left Yale and then my second year and went in the Navy.
Okay. Yeah. Because that was during
World War II. Yeah.
So near the end of World War II?
Yeah, it was in 1944. It was 2.5 years. 1946, they signed a peace. In 1946, the end of 46, I was only in 2.5 years in the Navy.
Did they send you overseas?
No, I was a lucky one. I stayed in the States. I was in the Naval Air Corps. and I was in Corpus Christi, Texas, when we used to fly PBY's Catalinas, and I used to fly from Corpus Christi to Pensacola, Florida. And I was getting paid to fly over the Gulf of Mexico. I was getting paid sea pay. Plus flight pay. And it was good duty, and I enjoyed. I volunteered 6 times to go out to sea, and they never let me go. So, hey, I was meant to be here. Yeah. Took care of the girls in the States instead.
Yeah. And so after that time in the service, you came back to Auburn?
Yes.
And
I wasn't married then. I was only 17. I got married young. I got married at 20. We've been married 61 years already. And I lived at the end of the street, on Gill Street. This is 4th and Gill, right at the end. That's where I live. I went for a test this morning.
Yeah.
And I've lived here all my life. I bought this place here. We had been married about 6 years, I think. I've been here almost 51 years now, this place here.
So you're comfortable, you're settled
yeah.
in?
Right.
Comfortable.
Wonderful. And so at 20 you got married.
Yep.
What were you doing for work at that time?
At that time I was working at the Pepper Manufacturing Company, which is the bleachery in Austin.
Right.
I worked there and they closed. They went down south. So that's when my wife was working at Belmont. Belmont and Austin, Belmont Incorporated. And she says to me, she says, well, wouldn't you like to come to work in the shoe? I said, my parents were in the shoe industry, and that's no, you work so many months a year and you loaf so many months. I don't want that. I want something that I can work steadily. Well, she says,
I went in one morning to work, and the owner, Mr. Izzy Viner, thought I looked sad. We'd just been married, you know, and I did, I guess. And he asked me why, and I said, well, my husband lost his job and we've just been married. And I said, he says, well, tell him to come and see me. I said, I don't know, he doesn't really want to work in the shoe factory. He said, tell him to come and see me and we'll discuss it. So that's how he got into the shoe business. And he went to see Mr. Viner. And from then it's.
So I went to see Mr. Viner and he says to me, do you want to come and work for me? He said, well, I says, I haven't got no experience. He says, I'll tell you. At that time, they were hiring a lot of young fellow like me to work on the GI Bill. So he says, come and work on the GI, and he says, I'll train you, I'll start you off on hand sewing, start you in the beginning. So I says, well, you know, the reason I don't want to come, I don't want to work 6 months and low 6 months. Come and work for me, Ray, you'll work year round. Fine, I'll take your word for it. So I did, and it was true. I started hand sewing after hand sewing for a year. Then he promoted me to a job in the factory, which was getting all the work. It was a production clerk, in other words, get all production ready. And after a while, he says to me, he says, how would you like to learn to be a pat maker? I said, I'd love to. Fine. So he took me down in the patent shop, and I started learning to be a pat maker.
And what does that entail?
Pat making is you... That's where the shoe is start. You cut up, you style the shoes, you design shoes, and from then you have what you call, you more or less like a paper cutter.
That's what I called it.
And you have to draft a lass. In other words, to make a pattern, so it'll be right, and of course you. You have a picture, you make a picture of the shoe that you're going to make, or they order, or they want, they'll send you pictures. And you have to design that shoe and make it. And a lot of these shoes, well, they have patents that are patented in Washington, D.C., that you can't do the same. You take a little bit off, and that's all you need. You know? But still, it's the same shoe. Nobody knows but you and who owns the patent. And then you'll cut the paper. You'll engineer the whole thing, and you cut the paper piece, every piece of a shoe. They take that paper, you bring it up into the what they call the cutting room. There, they'll put that paper on leather. They'll cut that leather, you know, from that paper they'll cut. And then they'll give it into the stitching room, then the girls will stitch it together. And they make one shoe. That's a trial. From that trial, once it's all done, we'll look at it and we make whatever has to be, you know, a lot of times you'll have to correct a lot of things on it. It's not perfect the first time. There's nobody that good that will make the first shot will make a shoe perfect. But after you've had, you know, the thing corrected well, then you'll buy what they call dies. Dies are to cut the leather, they're steel. And they put them on what they call a clicker, which is a cutting machine. They put this on leather, so they hit it, and it cuts a piece of leather. Every little piece that I've had designed and have cut in paper will be cut with different dies.
Mm-hmm. What I used to have to do is to find out how they could pay a stitcher to stitch that shoe together. How much? So I had to decide on the vamp, on the backstay, and all this.
Right.
And all those parts that he's talking about had a name. Okay. And those names had to say a stitcher or a backstay stitcher. From there, you have to decide how much they can afford to pay a backstitcher.
Mm-hmm. That was all piecework in the shoe industry. It's all piecework. So they get paid by the piece.
So you had to figure out how much to pay them for each shoe.
Yes, well, I would figure what approximately, and then the owners would get together and they would decide what they actually wanted to pay.
Right.
I didn't have the last decision on that, but I came pretty close every time. But sometimes they thought it was too much money, for instance. That usually was the thing. Of course, they have to know how much they can spend to make a shoe.
Right.
So that they can afford to sell it at so much, right? So that's where I came in. Mm-hmm. So that's about the size of it.
So, well, anyway, I worked there at Belmont. I became bat maker. I became head bat maker. And after that, I became superintendent of the factory. And we had two factories in Puerto Rico. I used to get a patent going, and I used to go down to Puerto Rico for a couple of weeks and start them off on that shoe. And then I'd come back home. I'd go down to Puerto Rico about 3 times a year to start a new shoe. Because down there, they had nobody that really, I mean, they had good stitchers, but nobody to okay that they were stitching it right.
Right.
And then after 30 years, I could see that they were closing down in Puerto Rico, and I could see that things went, you know, upsy-dupsy there.
Yeah.
So I was offered another job at Anomark in Lewiston. And Mr. Fleischer really wanted me, and I could see that. But Mr. Viner didn't want to let me go. He says, Ray, don't leave me. He says, I'm telling you. I says, look, we used to call him Mr. I. I says, look, Mr. I, this is going down and you know it. No, it's not. Don't worry about it. Everything is going to be okay. You'll see. Well, I says, look, I says, I've committed myself already and I have to go. Well, he says, it's all right. You won't be there a month. You'll be back. So I never went back. He closed 2 months later. And then I went to work for Arnold Fleischer, and I was with him for 12 years.
And you did the same type of thing?
Very, there I went in, patent maker and superintendent both right away. Because he needed a superintendent, and he needed a patent maker bad. And after Arnold closed, about 12 years later, I went to work for Crest Shoe for about 6 months. They wanted me there for patent making also. Then I had an offer to open a factory here in Lewiston, the Fry Company from Pennsylvania. Wanted to open a hand-sewn factory here on Lincoln Street. Nice little factory. I had probably 89 workers working for me and all. It was a nice little place. And that went very good. And I worked there for 2 years, and they sold to this other, to the Rigger company. And I hate to say this, but I couldn't stand the owner. And I was at an age I could retire. So I was nice. I gave him a good notice, and I kissed him goodbye. I says, that's it. He says, why are you leaving me? He says, you know, if I knew you were going to leave me, I never would have bought this place. I says, if I knew what you paid for this place, I would have bought it. he really stole it. He had it for peanuts. And he didn't last but a year after.
Yeah. Were there many shops left by the time you retired, or were they closing all around you?
Well, see, I've been retired 20 years already.
Okay.
And there was quite a few who left.
So that was the late 80s.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It's been 80. In fact, next week, not next week, in 2 weeks, I retired the first week of February. Mm. And I was 62. And you know, in the shoe industry, it's everything they want is yesterday. Not tomorrow, but yesterday. And in fact, after I came out, I had to go for 4 bypass. So I was, you know, my doctor said he couldn't understand why I wasn't getting a heart attack or a stroke. So it was time for me to retire.
Yeah.
It was too much pressure. But I enjoyed every minute of it, you know.
But you did some freelancing.
After that, yeah, I did some freelancing for myself. I had everything downstairs here in my place, in a cellar. And in fact, Ando gave me my own desk I had. And I did a little freelancing, which was nice, you know. And after I reached 65, I figured that was enough.
And the freelancing, would it be like the owners might call you and say, could you work on a pattern for
us? Yeah, they'll call me, they'll give me a shoe and say, Ray, could you make a pattern for this shoe?
Hmm.
And that was freelancing, different factories around.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't do too much, but it was enough just to keep me out of mischief.
Now, Rita, can you talk to me a little bit about where you were born and grew up?
Well, I was born in Lewiston. I grew up, stayed in Lewiston until I got married. After I got married, I moved to Auburn. We've been here 61 years, 50 years in this building.
And what was your maiden name?
My maiden name was Bouchard.
And what were your parents' names?
My father's name was Louis Bouchard. He was a carpenter, Finnish carpenter. Mom was a Mary Dumont. She, in fact, I've got a picture that Rachel wants. She worked in the mill till she retired. And in Bates Mill, she worked.
What did she do at the Bates Mill?
At the Bates Mill, she worked in the finishing room.
Mm-hmm.
They were making, like, the Martha Washingtons and Queen Elizabeths, and that's all we had on our beds at home. And actually, I'd like to have one.
Yeah, they were nice, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, and they were terrific. We all had one. And she worked there for years. And I remember when she used to work from 6 to 6. And then it went down. And that's what she did.
And how many brothers and sisters did you have?
I had one brother that died. My one brother and sister were born in Fort Kent, Maine. And the brother died at 3 months during the influenza in Fort Kent. And I was born in Lewiston with my baby sister and myself. So we were three girls, like me. Three girls. I was the middle one. And then when I graduated from high school, first place I had to work was a shoe shop in the office. And I had a lady. It was just that lady. Her name was Alice Miller. She was the office manager, but there was just the two of us. And boy, she was strict. I had the file just right. She showed me the best way to work in a shoe shop office. And then I worked there as a beginning. And then I went to Belmont. And I worked there for many years, till the girls came. My oldest one was born in 53. And after that, I didn't work, you know, for anymore. I stayed home with the girls till my baby was in school. Then I went to be an optometric assistant. And I worked for an optometrist for 2 years.
How did you get the opportunity to go into the shoe shop in the office?
I left high school, and they was asking for people to go work in the shoe shop office, and I tried, and there was a lot of girls that went, and I'm the only one that did, I guess, go to work for Alice Miller. But she was a nice lady. I really loved her because not many girls would have taken a whip attitude to show me things the way she did. But I learned, and I learned the right way. And then when I became office manager, they used to call me the whip. Because I learned from Alice Miller in the shoe shop office that you do things right or you don't do them at all. And that's how I train my girls. And my best friend today is a girl that worked for me for 10 years. So I couldn't have been that bad, you know.
Right. So how many years did you work at Belmont?
Oh, not too many. It's hard to say. I graduated in 46. And, well, then I worked till Pat was born. Yeah.
So
about 46 to 53.
Oh, 7 years about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of Mr. Viner used to bring me an orange every morning when I was pregnant. And not Mr. Izzy Viner, but his brother. I don't know why. One day he saw me eat an orange. I guess he thought I was craving oranges, which I wasn't. I never craved anything. But he'd bring me these beautiful big oranges. And the other girls in the office would say, well, how do you rate, you know? Yeah. But it's because I was pregnant and he liked me so much because I was pregnant. He's a nice man, too.
Yeah.
That's how I got in there, and from one shoe shop to the other. And I got friendly with the office manager, and we go out together, her husband and I, and her husband and Ray and I. It was
yeah. Well, her husband was a packing room foreman also.
Okay.
It was like one happy family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you know.
So you made friends in the shoe shops
yes.
as well.
Oh
yeah.
Yes. A lot of friends.
I've known a lot of people, but I forget names. That's my problem.
But like Bert Matthews.
We went out with him.
We went out with them for quite a few years, well, till his wife died.
And but Norm DeMers.
Well, I knew his wife
very
well.
His wife worked for me, Norm DeMers' wife.
Yeah.
And Norm, I knew he was also a superintendent in the shoe industry. Richmond Shoe, he worked.
He was
then he started his own business.
He was a leather person, wasn't he?
He was foreman of the cutting. He was a cutter. He started as a cutter.
But I know didn't he sell leather when he came out of the.
Yeah.
He made out very well. They got a beautiful home.
Are there any stories or recollections that you have from your time in the shoe shops that would kind of illustrate what it was like to work there?
Once I started it in the shoe industry, I enjoyed working in there, you know. I loved working in the shoe industry. And once I started in the patent making, that I really enjoyed. You know, it was something better than anything else, you know what I mean?
Right.
And
you made good money.
I made very good money. We lived well, you know. And
enough to work.
To bring three girls through college.
And weddings and braces.
Yeah,
it was. I enjoyed my life in the shoe industry.
That's
much, so.
One time we went to a shoe show in Massachusetts with a couple that owned a shoe store. Okay, so we go to the shoe show. And this young, handsome fellow comes to talk to me. I said to him, I said, what do you do in the shoe business? Well, he says, I'm a shoe engineer. Oh, that's nice. That must pay good. He says, well, yes. And I says, I asked him where he worked, someplace in Massachusetts, he told me. And I says, what does it entail to be a shoe engineer? He says, first, he says, you have to cut the paper. and then you have to have them cut some leather so they can make shoe. And Oh, I says, I call my husband the paper doll cutter.
He's a shoe engineer. Right. After that, I call myself a shoe engineer.
And you know, we always call him the paper doll cutter because he has this special paper. Do you have any more of that paper?
Oh, yeah.
He had this paper, and you know, when the girls got old enough. Oh, another thing that's quite interesting, I think, my daughters, I was kind of a strict mother, and I said that they should get a little job in the summer. So my oldest daughter, she definitely knew she wanted to be an RN. So Ray says, I'll give you a job. And she worked for you, Pat?
Yeah.
I'll give you a job.
And yeah, job in the stitching. She wasn't stitching. She put pieces together.
I'll give you a job, so he gave her a job in the shoe factory. And she'd come home every night. If anybody thinks I'm going to make that my life's ambition.
That was good.
And so he had big plans, you know, for her. But she was determined she was going to be an RN anyway. Here comes the second one. The day at the factory had passed a law that they people... That
couldn't hire people from your immediate family. Because,
so,
you know, there was too much friction.
Yeah.
And so I got her a job at Falcon Shoe, my second daughter. And she was a very good...
She's an artist.
She's an artist. Well, she's a graphic designer. Yep. And she was going to college to be a graphic designer. And in the summer, I had her go into Falcon, and they put her in the patent shop. Design shoe. Well,
she had it made.
She loved it. Yeah. But she says, I still don't want to stay in. She didn't like the smell of her leather, which I did. And my third one, well, she didn't.
She was a baby.
Was a baby. We spoiled
you
her.
You didn't make her go.
She'd do in the summer. She didn't do anything in the summer.
No, I think she stayed home.
Well, anyway, the other two worked in the shoe shop, but that was a good experience that they didn't want to do that for the rest of their life. But Louise, she had it made. She started in the factory, I guess. And Bob there was the boss, and you knew him. And he knew that you were a patent maker. She said, let's go in there. And they had her cut up things or something.
She liked it, but not enough to make that a career.
Right.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that I haven't asked you that you think is important to add?
All I can say, better never go to war with China because we'll go barefooted. Our factories are all in China now.
Yeah.
It's unreal. We have a few left here, but you know, what's left here is.
I know that I probably shouldn't say that on the mic. Rachel would like to have his tools.
Yeah, well, yeah, the museum is collecting whatever they can. Yeah.
Like I told her husband, they came here once. I says, when I die, I said, I'll make sure that my tools are donated to you people.
But till then, he won't.
Till then, don't
till
part
then,
with
I won't. And I have all kinds of patents, too.
Right.
Everything. I got hundreds of patents.
Nice. He's got drawers full of them downstairs.
That's great.
Yeah. He's got lash.
I got everything. But I threw away shoes.
What Rachel wanted.
Yeah. I didn't.
Well, we didn't.
That
know.
I didn't know. I would have given them to her. I had. You still want me to?
Yeah.
I had all kinds of shoes, different makes.
Mm-hmm.
All I had was the right foot, because that's all we make as a tribe, the right foot. And I think I had about 150 right foot.
Mm-hmm.
So one day I wanted to clean my shelf downstairs on top of my desk. I said to my wife, I said, I think I'm going to get rid of these. I don't need them anyway. I mean, that's, you know, that's obsolete. So I put them all in a big box, and Friday morning I put them to the trash outside the up the trash on Friday. These guys come because they see that they took every shoe out. They try to match. They spent probably 20 minutes trying to match. And I happened to look in the window. I saw them. They were trying to match, you know, trying to match. None of them match. They were all right foot. So after they smartened up, they were always all right foot. You know, I opened the door. I said, guys, you'll never match them. Why did you tell us that before?
I think it must be some hospital probably had people with just one foot.
Oh, well, I put them in the trash anyway. I mean,
but now that Rachel knows that, she's upset.
Yeah, Rachel says, why didn't you keep it? Well, then it was before that was started.
Right.
I
yeah. It's hard to think of those things that far ahead.
Right.
But yeah. Well, great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I appreciate talking.